Honestly, Eric, I think I'd be fine in prison.
Yeah, all right.
I think my personality would get me through.
You know, you're probably right. I think you would be a very popular person to hang out with in prison.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would give me too much trouble. I
No.
mean, I don't know that, obviously, but.
Only one way to find out. Welcome back to Low Rollers. We made it to a second week. They haven't canceled us yet. Although, to be fair, the over-under was set at 2.5 episodes, so the sweat continues. I'm Eric Raskin. The next voice you'll hear will be that of Jeff Edelstein. We are writers for CasinoReports.com and LotteryGeeks.com, and we thank you for tuning in to the second episode of our second gambling industry podcast together. You can listen on RSS.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much anywhere. If you're not subscribing, please subscribe. If you haven't given us a rating yet, please give us a 5-star rating. That'll help ensure we hit the over on episodes. Jeff, how's it hanging? Or maybe I should ask, how low you rolling?
It's hanging high. It's too cold. I think both of my testicles are in my stomach currently. You ask, you're gonna get
Yeah,
an answer.
you gave me a very literal answer there. All right, that's fine.
I'm one of those people that you shouldn't ever ask, how are you? Because you're probably going to get an answer. But yeah, anyway, good to be back. Second week, feeling good, feeling strong. Coming up later, we got a chat with our old pal, Brianne Dura-Shawal, about VIP hosting and responsible gambling and all that stuff. But first, as always, Eric, plenty of news to discuss.
Yeah, and this week, I'm not sure if we can call this the biggest news or the most important news, because it may not really ultimately amount to much, but it's certainly the most interesting news to discuss out there since our last episode. Our top story is DraftKings making a deal with Delta Airlines. For what exactly? We don't know. Some sort of game experience available on the seatback screen in front of you. That's about all they've said. Jeff, you looked into this a little. You did the bare minimum amount of research, kind of your forte. You found out that it is definitely not legal currently to permit real money gambling while in any state's airspace. So, any guess what this is going to look like? Any opinions on what you want it to look like? Hit me with any thoughts you have on this news.
I'd first like to address the bare minimum part of the
Sure.
conversation.
Sure.
You know, I pride myself on, you know, mile wide and inch deep. You know what I mean? Like, I know a little about a lot. And,
okay.
And so what appears to the outsider as minimum effort is actually just, you know, facile. Is that the word I'm looking for? So anyway, yes, DraftKings and Delta. I mean, you know, this again, I am all for whatever this is. And which is a silly thing to say because
right.
you have no idea what it is. But, you know, I DraftKings, more than FanDuel, at least, you know, on the surface here, appears to be trying to become, you know, the Apple of American sports betting. You know, like trying to be, you know, that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. Like almost like Apple versus Samsung. You know what I mean? I think they're trying to like really position themselves as like when you think of gambling, you think of DraftKings, right? Which
right.
I think, you know, judging by like how, you know, American capitalism and things like that seem to work, that seems to be a pretty good plan, right? You know, because getting your name and brand out there as much as humanly possible into as many places as you can seems to be a pretty good, you know, has a pretty good track record of, you know, success in this country. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good call. Cause I was, you know, I'm wondering, you know, if this is not any real money sort of gambling thing, then what's in it for DraftKings? The obvious answer would be branding. Unless, you know, Delta is actually paying them to design some sort of in-flight games. Again, we don't really know what this consists of, but yeah, the branding, the sort of the sense that I hadn't really thought about that they are trying to become synonymous with sports betting. And maybe even though they're losing to FanDuel on the revenue front, maybe they're beating FanDuel in the American mainstream recognition front. Although that, I guess that comes with negatives too. Like the fact that they're doing this thing with Delta, whatever it is, I'm thinking about how this all factors into the big picture topic for our industry that sports betting is now everywhere. And that with that comes pushback and negative press and negative op-eds and all that. Like if the DraftKings logo is all over your Delta flight, you're just begging for some negative press about how you can't take a kid on an airplane anymore without exposing them to this addictive vice and all that. So I think you're right that DraftKings is getting their name out there very successfully, and this sort of deal, whatever it is, will help with that. But I think it's a bit of a mixed bag to be that synonymous with sports betting right now.
I guess, but I think the key element there is the right now part. I mean, nobody is, you know, wringing their hands over the fact that when you watch a football game on Sunday with your 10-year-old kid that, you know, there's 13,000 beer ads. You know, like, I mean, I guess there's some people that aren't thrilled with it, but nobody's, you know, not hearing about it.
I feel like people used to wring their hands over that when I was a kid, but that it's, yeah, eventually it reaches, right, it reaches the point where it's just an accepted part of the viewing experience.
Right, so if you want to be, you know, an S&P 500 company, you know, if you want to be, like, the biggest in your field, you got to take some risk, some gamble. DraftKings certainly has done that. You know, I mean, just go back 10 years, what DraftKings was and what it is now. You know,
right.
it's it's really a completely different business. I'm not going to pretend to know what Jason Robbins and company are thinking.
Right.
But I'm pretty confident they're thinking well past sports betting and well past iCasino and in trying to ingratiate themselves into like every facet of American gambling thought. And, you know, I mean, like, when you think of Budweiser, I mean, it's like in a weird way, like the beer part of it is like secondary somehow. I know that doesn't make sense because all they sell is beer. But when I think of Budweiser, I'm not like thinking like of beer as much as I'm thinking of Budweiser, if that makes sense.
I'm not quite picking
it's
up
like
what you're putting down.
It's more like it's a feeling, I guess.
Like you sort of picture the logo and the horses and whatever else
here,
from the commercial.
Let's forget Budweiser for a second.
Okay.
If you were going to throw a party at your house and it was going to be like a beach themed, you know, beach bash party, and you're going to throw some sand down in your backyard and blow up some beach balls and play some reggae music, what kind of beer are you going to buy?
Well, I'm maybe the wrong person because I'm not really a big beer guy, but okay, like a reggae beach theme beer. I don't know, Corona? Is that what
you're
getting
gonna
at?
Yeah, you're going to buy Corona.
Okay.
You're going to buy Corona, right? Not because you like Corona necessarily, but because that it's been imprinted upon you that if you Corona equals beach party, right? Because of their marketing, right?
Right.
I think DraftKings is probably trying to go down that same path, right? Where they're just trying to create this feel, right? When you think of gaming, gambling, whatever, they want DraftKings to be what comes to mind, you know? And again, when you think of cola, man, I could really go for a cola. Nobody's thinking, man, I could really go for a cola.
Right.
Nobody's thinking I could really go for an R, or for that matter, for an RC. They're like, I want a Coke.
Right.
You have Coke? You know, we have Pepsi. I don't have Pepsi, yeah. Right? But I mean, I think that's the feel that they're going for here. Whereas I think most other gambling companies are just going for the gambling dollar. Whereas DraftKings, I think, is going for like the hearts and mind dollar.
Yeah, I think that's well said, and I think the Coke Pepsi example may be better than the Apple Samsung example that you started with. That DraftKings is trying to be the Coke here and relegate FanDuel to the Pepsi role, and so we're at a point in history where Pepsi is outselling Coke in this scenario, but DraftKings is kind of playing the long game to be the Coke, and Delta is like one more little step in that direction.
I would not be surprised to learn that DraftKings, that there's, you know, there's people at DraftKings whose entire job is to get the brand out as much as possible.
Right.
Right.
And I gotta say, as long as we're talking about the intersection between gambling and flights and all that, I had a thought here. When the Low Rollers fan club forms, because you know it's coming, there's definitely people are going to start up a fan club for our podcast. It's got to be called the Mile Low Club, right? That'd be pretty good. You're joining the Mile Low Club. What do you think? As the guy who came up with our fantastic end of the podcast catchphrase, do I get a sign off on the Mile Low Club for our fan club, or is that a pass from Jeff Edelstein?
I think you should once again just leave the funny asides to me.
Fine. All right. Oh, well. All right.
You tried.
I know my place.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to some other news. On Tuesday, the Attorney General in D.C. announced Intralot was being fined $5 million for, back in 2019, quote, deceiving city officials to win and then obtain payments under the district's multi-million dollar, multi-year lottery and sports betting contract. Intralot's subcontractor, VSC, was also fined $1.5 million. I don't have a lot to say here. It just, like, when you thought Intralot running DC sports betting was as complete and total a disaster as it could possibly have been, we find out there are additional layers to the disaster.
Was there ever a moment in time when this wasn't a disaster? I feel like it. I feel like when from the moment they launched that this was just problems from the jump.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been, and even though they're basically out now and handed it over to FanDuel, we're still finding things out. And I guess the takeaway is that sports betting monopolies are usually bad. That's one of the lessons here, that they're bad for consumers, they cause problems, they inspire companies to do whatever it takes to win the contract, as we're learning with this fine. And you know, we still have a few monopolies. DC is not a monopoly anymore, but New Hampshire, Delaware, Rhode Island, Florida, they're still out there, and they seem to cause more trouble than they're worth.
Yeah. I think no one's missing Intralot, though.
No. And last story to quickly hit on here, FanDuel is bringing back the Kick of Destiny Super Bowl promotion, but Gronk is out and the Manning brothers are in. I have a pretty strong lean on which Manning brother I'm picking to win this thing, although game theory, maybe I should go against my pick if I feel like everyone else is going to agree with me. I got to back Eli. He's younger. He was always a little more mobile than Peyton, right? He didn't have neck fusion surgery or whatever Peyton had. So my every instinct tells me he's better suited to make a kick. But if you agree with me, that means probably a lot of people agree with me, which means maybe Peyton is the right game theory play here.
Yeah, I do agree that's Eli. My take on this is like, this is classic, like, older brother, more talented at the thing that they're known for. And so little brother has a chip on his shoulder, and, like, older brother could give a shit whether or not, you know. Like, I mean, older brother wants to win, but, like, it's almost like, all right, little brother, you go ahead. You kick your silly little field goal, and you get to win. You know, the one thing that's interesting about this, that, like, I wrote about this, and it didn't even, like, cross my mind when I wrote about it. I guess the Mannings and Caesars, that's done, huh?
Oh, hadn't even thought about that. Yeah, right? I must be. I don't think they're working with FanDuel and Caesars at the same time.
So there you go.
Although, wait, who's the third brother that you thought was the funny one in the commercials?
Cooper. Cooper. He was great.
So maybe he's still with Caesars.
Cooper was hilarious. So, yeah, I think Eli is the smart money. I installed him on the day of as a -140 favorite, so we'll see.
Oh, I might go I might even make him a bigger favorite than that. But it's all about, I'm waiting to see what the projected ownership percentages are here, and whether the value then becomes Peyton because you're splitting the pot with fewer people. But yeah, Eli's got to be the favorite.
Yeah, I guess I'm getting close in line value on that.
Maybe at this point, yeah. All right, enough of our stupidity. I think we should talk to a smart person now. What do you say?
Yeah, that's always a good idea.
We're two episodes into our new podcast, and so far we're playing the hits, bringing back some of our favorite guests from the old podcast. Look, you can't go wrong playing the hits. And it is always a delight to talk to this guest, Brianne Dora-Shawal. She's the founder and CEO of Dora-Shawal Consulting, formerly of Epic Risk Management and the National Council on Problem Gambling. Simply put, she's one of the foremost authorities on problem and responsible gambling. We always look forward to her insights. Brianne, thanks for joining us on Low Rollers.
Oh my goodness, you guys, the dynamic duo is back. I'm your second guest. What an honor. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, but since Eric said that we're playing the hits, we do expect you to do your rendition of Leonard Skinner's Freebird before the interview is over.
Well, it looks like our time has come to an end. Thank you both so much, but I'm going to go now. The last thing anybody wants to hear from me is singing. Let's just call it like it.
You could just strum the guitar. Sure. Do an instrumental version.
Yeah.
My husband and kids have ukuleles. What do we think? Can we get that?
Okay. Done.
All right. Yeah. Bring them around. We'll talk a little gambling first, but at the end of the interview, I do expect your husband and kids to walk into the room with ukuleles.
Sounds good. So what are we going to talk about today? Gambling, obviously something the three of us love to talk about all the time, probably too much, our families
Right.
might argue.
Yes, we are going to talk about gambling. And the main thing that we want to talk about is the online VIP hosting scene, which has really gotten on people's radars recently, particularly with two lawsuits. There was Sam Antar suing BetMGM, and more recently, the estranged wife suing DraftKings, both suits alleging that the VIP hosts took advantage of problem gamblers with what sounds, according to the allegations, like pretty predatory practices. So, two questions to start with. This online VIP hosting thing, was this on your radar before these two lawsuits? And then, how bad does this look to you as far as these operators who say they take responsible gambling seriously, but then we see them arguably doing the exact opposite?
Yeah, no, this has been on my radar since we really started to see the market come into establishment, right? At first, it was about player acquisition. What does that look like? I didn't really love all the bonuses and promotions that were being pushed into markets. Heck, I really didn't like when we were talking about the tax deductions that the industry was getting from these. But now that the market has become quite established, seeing what is proliferating with these VIP programs has been high on my radar. And it's not just here in the US, right? We saw some of the first regulations come about high-value players, AKA VIPs, in the UK not that long ago. So this is an area of interest from a problem and responsible gambling perspective. I think it is a huge issue for the industry if they don't get a hold of it right now. The industry, no secret, struggles with an image problem. And I think that VIP is potentially the Achilles heel here. To your point, Eric, you hear a lot of narratives. We're really deeply committed to responsible gambling. We contribute a lot to doing everything we can to prevent problem gambling. But then stories like the two that you quoted continue to arise. And when the facts come out, it's really hard to understand how these businesses are prioritizing problem and responsible gambling, yet these instances happen. If you recall, Jeff and I were both participants on a round table talking about something else, but I was the one that brought up VIP. It is that big of an issue to me, and I really hope that regulators start to do more trying to get a better understanding and to address this.
Are you getting a lot of pushback on bringing up the issue the way you did? You sort of joked before we started recording, or again, semi-joke, that there are people in the industry who don't like you very much. When you brought up the VIP hosting issue, did you get blowback from bringing that
Wow,
up?
are you going to be this hard with all your other guests? Guys, be warned. No, it's a very fair question. And sure, I joked about it, but actually, it's rooted in a lot of truth. Yes, I get a lot of pushback and a lot of cold shoulders when I bring this issue up. Why? I think there's two really important pieces of US-based research that highlight how important VIP programs are to the industry. And when we see such a significant portion of the revenue coming from such a small percentage of players, it's very clear that it is nothing to do with problem or responsible gambling. It has to do with the dependency these businesses have on this program. So, anytime I bring it up, there's this perception that I am bringing to light a real existential threat to their business model. And, there is probably some truth to that. I believe that there is a flawed business model currently. When you rely on such a small percentage of players to drive an overwhelming percentage, and by the way, I'm not even talking 50%, I'm talking 71% in some jurisdictions. In Massachusetts, there was a piece of research that highlighted 90% of revenue is coming from those who are addicted to gambling. Someone's got to ask the
Wow.
tough question, is this an industry that is built on addiction? Is this business model moving in the wrong direction? Is this business model going to inevitably lead to federal intervention? I don't think it's looking so good right now, you guys.
Yeah. You know, there's a bunch of things that are that you said there that kind of connect to me a little bit in that, you know, one of the topics I've been covering for a long time is the idea of limiting, because I've been limited at numerous sports books for most of the time for reasons I'm not clear of. Do you think that this would be less of an issue? I guess two parts. If A, there was less limiting and thus people who were like winning money were definitely going to be VIPs. And two, if we knew exactly what the VIP breakdown was, like, are all VIPs at this point losers? Right. And I, you know, back 5, 6 years ago when I was in New Jersey, I had 25 different sports to choose from. I was betting 5,000 here and 5,000 there and collecting my, you know, $500 or whatever. And I became a VIP at a sports book, not to be named. I'm no longer a VIP there. They stopped talking to me. I loved it. They were offering me bonus, you know, deposits, and, you know, and so, like, I kind of, I guess what I'm saying here is that is there a fine line maybe where the VIP programs could, maybe they're okay. Maybe we're hearing the just the bad side of it. Or is it possible? I'm not asking this question the way I want to ask it. Is there a place to thread the needle here where this all works out? And are they not doing that?
I think you actually asked it very well. I know exactly what you're getting at. And I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like most things in policy, right? The truth exists somewhere in the middle. I don't become a VIP at some of my favorite clothing stores because I don't spend a lot of money, right? You have to show that you're going to invest in the company. Now, in the case of shopping, I get something when I give the money, right? In the case of gambling, I tend right now, in most versions of the industry's VIP programs, I get rewarded the more I lose. And we see that in some of these stories that are coming to light, right? I also think back to one of the most renowned pieces of 2024 by the Wall Street Journal, right? It talked about a medical professional, like a therapist, becoming addicted to these products, right? And it focused on this incentivization. And it generally was when losses were happening, you would get fed more offers. And unfortunately, from a clinical standpoint, this is very dangerous. This is incentivizing or enabling someone to chase losses. False hope that this is a way to make money or to actually use gambling as a way to fund your basic necessities. In the case of this piece I'm talking about, there was some concern about not making a mortgage payment. So to your point, Jeff, do I think that there is a fine line here? Do we potentially see less concerns around VIP if we stop limiting people? Perhaps that would also mean that they define VIP as that all are welcome winners, those who tend to lose, but that they are not going to lose so much and then get rewarded for it. I think both have to coexist, if that makes sense. So the thing that I brought up at the round table is that we hear so much about the utilization of data to drive this industry forward, right? Everything centers around how we use data, player data, data on sports, whatever. But we're not using the technology that currently exists to track that player data for business opportunities, like creating an ideal VIP customer, but also to identify and potentially limit those that probably shouldn't be spending at the rates they are. And until there is a requirement to do so and to standardize it across platforms, I think this is going to consider to be a top issue. Now, certain regulators and customers might not know how this is happening or why, right? But when we look at just the ins and outs of the daily ops, the businesses, VIP, it all just keeps coming right on back to it. It is like the nucleus, I believe. We have hit a nerve, which is probably why people get so mad at me.
Are these VIP programs significantly different than like casino-based, you know, land-based things?
Well, just by nature of the difference in how we're consuming online products versus going, right? I mean, think about the ways that you now have access to your player online versus relying on that customer to come in the door or having to pick up the phone or sending an email. We're now seeing these inducements happen right within the app or constant text communication. Predating your time in the industry, things looked and felt a lot different. There's more friction, and friction is actually a really important component to good responsible gambling. And I think that's the other inconvenient truth here, because we're trying to build an entire industry that's a UX that's frictionless. How many times do the three of us hear that, whether we're at a conference or we're talking to industry professionals? Everything is based on seamless, frictionless experiences. That's very problematic, especially for someone who might be at risk or already struggling with a problem. Friction is important, and that exists in brick and mortar casinos and doesn't online.
So the last big subtopic here that I feel like we have to hit on, it's connected to all this, is the topic of affordability checks. And it's a big topic. It maybe could be saved for a whole separate interview, but sort of a brief reaction to it. What is your feeling on the concept of affordability checks? And I'm sure that in terms of friction, the books don't want them. But do you think that they are potentially realistic at some point, or something that you would like to see, or it's just a bridge too far?
Wow, that absolutely warrants you bringing on experts and talking about this. And I'm not sure I'm that person, and I'm not too proud to say it. What I can tell you is that I don't think it's going to ever be universally applicable or applied here in the US. I worry about the constitutionality of something like an affordability check, if I'm being very candid. Mm-hmm. However, I do believe that there is some merit to it within a certain cohort. So someone who might be considered for a VIP, I believe it is appropriate. I don't see that happening in the near term. Obviously, the books don't want it. Obviously, consumers are skeptical to turn over things like personal financial statements. I just actually got off a webinar talking about this very topic in the UK. And there was this interesting survey that was done that was talking about why people migrate to the black market. And I believe the statistic, forgive me, listeners, if I was wrong, but it said about 40% of people who were going to the black market cited that they didn't want to turn over their financials to someone at a book to get some action. And so this is something we have to talk about, because illegal books are just as big of an existential threat to consumer wellness as legal books. But the truth is, it's complicated. I'm sorry, that seems like such an out of an answer, but it's not as easy as people would like. And I don't think the books are going to win every victory and say, we're just not going to have to deal with it. I don't think it's going to be universally applied. We've got to come up with something, though, because right now, without being the judge of anything that has been filed in any case or in any paper, the practices I'm seeing are quite predatory. They're very problematic from a public health perspective. Consumers deserve better. The books need to become less reliant on building a business from the backs of people who can't otherwise afford it. And the destruction is real.
All right. I suspect this is not the last time that we will have you on Low Rollers. You remain a friend of ours and a favorite guest of ours. And you can shoot higher to the top of the list if you can get your husband to run in with a ukulele real quick before we sign off. Is he around?
He's not around, unfortunately. He's in a briefing right now.
All right. We'll give you a pass. Yes. Come with a song to sing or play next time, but we'll let it go this time. Unless, Jeff, are you furious that you're not getting Freebird?
Well, I could sing it if you like.
And we're out of time.
That's our cue.
Yes. Brianne, thanks so much for joining us. I'll let everyone know you can learn more about her company and everything she does at consultbds.com. Brianne, always great talking to you.
You too. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Brianne. So before we wrap up, since I just know everyone was dying for a follow-up on my playoff best ball misclick story from last week, I had four playoff best ball teams, which I realize is probably equal to, what, about 1% of your portfolio, Jeff?
Roughly.
Okay. But I had four teams on DraftKings where just the top one in every field of six advances, and one of my four advanced.
Yay!
And of course it was the team with the accidental Chase and Charbonnet clicks. But yeah, that team advanced, and it didn't even have Ladd McConkey, and still advanced anyway. But I'm not very optimistic that I'll advance to round three. I have five active players. I'm going to need a really lucky draw just to make it another week. I'm hoping that I'm running into five McConkey Chargers stack teams that made it to the second round.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a ton of McConkey teams that are out there. Yeah, I mean, it, as always, playoff best ball, it's maddening, right? In that, like, if you had, like, an Eagles stack, you probably didn't get through. But if you did figure out a way to get through with it, you know, you're in good shape. So
I mean, I had two of my four teams were built around Eagles stacks. One that has a really nice Eagles on one side, Chiefs on the other. And, of course, that didn't come close to advancing.
Right. So, you know, I mean, if you're looking at your best ball teams, if you have Eagles on your team, if you have, you know, Lions and Chiefs on your team, you know, then I think you're you have some hope. But again, you know, all it takes is another Ladd McConkey type effort by, you know, somebody out there that snuck through, and you know, it's you know, that gets you through. It's I love it though. It's fun. I got through on Underdog 36% of my teams, which, you know, I should have gotten through 33%. So
okay.
A bit harder.
All right. All right. You're beating the field. Yeah.
So I'm hoping, you know, I just give me one team somewhere into the Super Bowl. That's it. That's all I want. Just a little fun, a little sweat.
I'm rooting for you to get there. You're due one after your playoff best ball where my Phillies broke your heart and ruined your shot at millions.
That was well, millions is strong, but that one hurt. We don't need to recap that. All right. So before we go, you know, I've been seeing on X, Twitter, whatever, so some commenters in our world, you know, in the gambling world, complain about the coverage Polymarket is getting in the mainstream media. And they say, rightly so, that Americans can't put money into the site, right? But which is technically true. But, you know, I'm also pretty confident that people with, you know, slightly better technical skills than me have workarounds if they want to bet on Polymarket. You know, and these people are also saying, rightly so, that this is not regulated gambling, that it's not sports betting, and it's certainly not regulated sports betting. And all this is true, right? I get it. But, you know, a rose by any other name, and, you know, since I'm going to start spitting out cliches, here's another one. Joe Q Public and Congressman Joe Q Public are not seeing Polymarket as a horse of a different color. They're seeing it as gambling, plain and simple. And to stick our heads in the sand, right, in the regulated market here or whatever, and attempt to, you know, another cliche coming up, split hairs, is kind of an exercise of futility. If someone is anti-gambling or if they think gambling is running amok, good luck trying to explain to them the difference between a four-team parlay on DraftKings, you know, in a regulated state, and, you know, putting some Bitcoin on whether Malibu's going to burn to the ground or whether Lily Phillips is going to set a record for most sexual partners in one day. You know, so this is all gambling to people that are not in the industry. So to treat it otherwise, we're just asking for more and more and more trouble. Eric, that's all I got. Until next week, we're low rollers, small stakes, and hot takes.